Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to our Foundation Bible Study here at First United Methodist Church, Murfreesboro. I'm Cliff Wright, the senior pastor. We believe that the study of Scripture is important for us as followers of Christ, and I hope that you find this week's study on the Gospel of Matthew meaningful and inspiring in your own personal life. Our Bible study meets each Wednesday at 6 p.m. in Sanctuary. And I also hope you'll consider joining us at one of our four weekly worship services at 8:30 and 11 a.m. on Sundays, both in the Sanctuary and the Family Life Center. And as always, you can find us at our website, www.fumcm.org, or you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FUMC Borough. The purpose of our Bible study is to help us fulfill our mission of growing disciples of Jesus Christ who know Him, love Him, and serve Him. I hope this week's study helps you in your own personal journey towards knowing, loving, and serving Christ in your life.
Trey, thank you so much. We appreciate that so much. Tonight, Trey and I were messaging back and forth about kind of where we're headed in this tonight, and I was telling him, and that was perfect, Trey. That was just perfect in terms of where it is that that we're wanting to go tonight, where we're headed tonight. This is an important session tonight in Matthew study, and we'll turn back to some of this at other times as we move into our second semester. Here's what we got. We got another couple of weeks left in this semester. We got next week and then the next, which you remember the next week, that is the what? The Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And that's our break. So we break in 2 weeks. So make sure, be here this week, be here next week. Then we'll break for a few weeks. We'll come back after Christmas. We finish up the Gospel of Matthew. And I just want to encourage you to stay committed, encourage you to keep coming. I'm going to be working hard to make it worth your while that when we finish up, you know, we're going to be able to look back and say, you know, I think I have a better understanding of what it is that Matthew is saying in his gospel, what it is that Jesus is calling us to do. So tonight, here's what we're going to do tonight. It's a little bit different. We're going to start to see how some of this stuff really starts to fit together. So we're going to cover some different chapters to see how these things fit together. So what I want you to do is turn first to chapter 16 tonight. What we're going to do is we're going to look at 16, a portion of 16, a portion of 8, and a portion of 10, not the whole chapters, and kind of see how that also fits back into some of the things that we ended with in chapter 7 last week. You remember, as you're turning to chapter 16, in chapter 7 last week, we ended with, starting with verse 13, enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. And that's just kind of interesting to me. And I think that's true. I think it's really true. The gate is wide, for the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Enter by the narrow gate. The gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. Gate is wide and the way is easy. I want us to keep those words in mind tonight as we begin. The gate is wide. The way is easy. It's easy that leads to destruction. And those who enter by it are many. The gate is narrow, the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Beware of the false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You'll know them by their fruits. And we're going to come back to that here in just a minute. Chapter 16, this is pivotal. Chapter 16 is a pivotal section. What we're fixing to read in Matthew's gospel. And I'm starting with the 13th verse in chapter 16. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do men say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say I am?" And that's the key question, isn't it? It always becomes personal. So you see what Jesus is doing. He comes up to the disciples. He said, "Look, you guys have been out on the street. You've been hearing the talk. You've been hearing what other people are saying. What's the word going around? What are people saying? Who do they say that I am?" And it's always a little bit easier to talk about what other people say, isn't it? What does somebody else say about this or that, especially when it's something really, really important, really significant. Well, what are other people saying? What are they saying about me out there? And I said, "Well, some say you're John the Baptist, some say you're Elijah or Jeremiah or one of the other prophets." Then he got personal. Personal. Faith's always personal. "Who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter was the one who spoke up. "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you're Peter, and on this rock I'll build my church, and the powers of death shall not prevail against it." So notice the flow of what's going on, what's happening here. What do they say about me out there? Well, some of them say you're John the Baptist, some Elijah, some Jeremiah, some one of the other prophets. What about you? Who do you say I am? Simon Peter spoke up and said, "You're the one." Simon Peter realized it. He got it. "You're the one. You're the one we've been waiting on. You are the Christ. You're the Messiah." And Jesus said, "You're right. Yes, you're right." Now notice the next thing that he says, starting with verse 21. The next thing, after Simon Peter said, "You're the one," and Jesus said, "Yes, you are right, and on this rock I'll build my church." Notice the next thing he said, verse 21. From that time on, from that moment when Simon Peter said, "You're the one," from that time Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem, suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. What are they saying about me out there? John the Baptist, Elijah, Jeremiah, one of the prophets. What about you? Who do you say I am? You're the one, aren't you? You're the one we've been waiting on. And Jesus said, "Yes, I'm the one." Then Jesus began to show them what it meant to be the one, what it meant to be the Messiah. And this is what he said. This is what it means to be the Christ. It means going to Jerusalem, suffering from the elders, many things from the elders, chief priests, and scribes, and then dying. And on the third day, being raised. Notice how Peter responds to that. Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, "God forbid, Lord, this shall never happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You're a hindrance to me, for you're not on the side of God, but of men." Because it went against everything that those disciples believed the Messiah was going to be. So Simon Peter answered, "Right, you're the Christ." And then Jesus said, "Okay, now it's really important that you get this. This is what it means." And so he didn't just talk to them about what it meant. Notice he showed them, this is what it means to be the Christ. It means suffering, giving up your life, sacrificing, dying on your behalf. That's what it means. It means giving up your life, suffering, dying, then being raised. Simon Peter just couldn't live with that. There's no way. There's no way. There's absolutely no way that this is going to happen to you. Then notice the next thing. This is really important, the flow of this. Notice the very next thing. Verse 24. Then Jesus told his disciples, "And if anyone would come after me, let that person deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." So what's he saying? What are they saying about me out there? They're saying, you're one of the prophets, maybe John the Baptist, maybe Elijah, Jeremiah. What about you? Who do you say I am? And Simon Peter got it. You're the one, aren't you? You're the Christ. Then Jesus said, yes. Yes, I am. Let me show you what that means. What that means is suffering, sacrifice, taking up the cross, dying on your behalf, being raised. Simon Peter said, there's no way. There's no way that that's what that means. And look at how Jesus answered him. Not only is that what it means for Jesus, what did Jesus say? It's also what it means for whom? For who? For us. That's what it means for us. That's what it means for us. Holy moly, who wants to hear that? Simon Peter didn't want to hear it about Jesus. You see? Well, Simon Peter, this is the thing I love about Simon Peter. You know, he's, you know, like me, he opened his mouth before he thinks. You know, I do that all the time. Do you do that? I mean, you know, Simon Peter was one. But the other thing I love about Simon Peter is he was always the first in. It's like, hey, I'm with you. You're the one, aren't you? Yes. And he was also very honest. When Jesus said, this is what it means the cross. It means suffering. It means sacrifice. It means giving yourself up because that's how you find life. You notice how he said, suffer, die, then be raised, because it produces life. So it gives life to us. Simon Peter said, no way that's going to happen. And Jesus said, not only is that the life for me, but if you're going to come after me, it's your life. It's your life as well. Okay? Now what I want us to do, hold all of that, because this is the thing. You know, if we get this, if Jesus' followers, that's who we are. Get this. That's where we turn our communities upside down. This is where we turn our churches inside out. If we get this, if we get this, we're not the same. We'll never, ever, if we really get it, we'll never, ever be the same. We'll be a whole lot more than we ever dreamed of being if we get this. Now, turn back to chapter 8. So hold all of that in your mind. This is what it means to be a follower of Christ. It's taking up this way. It's taking up the cross. Several years ago, I heard a statement. I can't remember exactly from whom, but I've written it down. It just comes to my mind every so often, this thing about taking up your cross and following. There's a big difference between taking up our cross and letting the cross fall on top of us. Big difference. Big difference. And what Jesus said, if you're going to follow me, it's taking up the cross. That means giving up of ourselves. That means, as he's suffering, dying, sacrifice. But it's an interesting thing. That's really where we find life. All right, we go back to chapter 8 then tonight. Keeping in mind chapter 7, where we closed last week, enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide. The way is easy that leads to destruction. Those who enter by it are few. Are many, for the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Beware of the false prophets. You'll know them by their fruits. All right, chapter 8, starting with verse 18. Now when Jesus saw great crowds around him, he gave orders to go over to the other side, and a scribe came up and said to him, Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. Remember, chapter 16, here's the way. This is where I'm going. And Jesus is calling his disciples to do what? Follow me. Take up your cross and follow me. This is not only my way, it's your way as well. So, chapter 8. A guy comes up to Jesus and he said, Teacher, I will follow you. And notice the last three words, wherever you go. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Let me tell you how preachers, let me just tell you what preachers think about this. If you come up to me and you say, I want to be a Christian, I want to follow, I want to be a committed disciple, I want to get involved, what's that preacher going to say? Come on in, right? What are you going to say? Come on in. I mean, what do you expect Jesus to say here? There's a guy who says, I will follow you, I'll go wherever you want me to go. Hey, man, I've been waiting on somebody like you. Let's go. Well, what does Jesus say? Guy comes up and he says, Teacher, I'll follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said to him, Foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Well, what kind of an answer is that? Jesus, I want to follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said, Come on. Man, I'm excited to find somebody like you. No. Jesus says, foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. What's Jesus saying there? Why is he saying that? Here's what I think is going on here. Jesus is wanting this guy to know what? Jesus is wanting this guy to know what he's getting himself into. Jesus, I'll follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said, well, here's where wherever you go means. Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Jesus is reminding this guy that to follow him is not this wide way. Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. The gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life. The guy comes up and says, hey, I want to follow you. Jesus is reminding him, look, way is hard, narrow and hard. And this is not an easy thing that you're saying that you want to do. So Jesus is reminding him, look, understand what it is that you're getting yourself into. Jesus, in other words, is telling this guy the truth, right? He just said, look, you need to understand what it is you're getting yourself into, and I need you to know what the truth is. When you think of our culture's understanding of what it means to be a Christian, would you say that's an easy way or a hard way? Our culture's understanding of what it means to be a Christian, is that would you say that's an easy way or hard way? Easy? What does our culture say? Being a Christian, easy or hard? Look, you got to make a commitment. It's one or the other. You got a 50-50 chance. You got a 50-50 shot here. In our culture, in our culture today, people's understanding of being a Christian, is that an easy way or a hard way? Easy? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's our culture's understanding. It's an easy way. Several years ago, I believe in taking the flu shot. I don't know whether you do or not. Whatever rocks your boat. But I believe in taking the flu shot. And the reason is I don't like being sick. I just don't like it. I'm a pansy at being sick, so I'll do anything I can to keep from being sick. So I take flu shot. And my father-in-law is a retired physician. And so years ago, before he had retired, I used to let him shoot me up. I'd get the flu shot from Amy's dad. And I asked him one time, I said, how does this stuff work? I mean, this vaccine, these vaccines, stuff like that. How does this work? It's some like magic. Take a shot, don't get the flu. How does it work? He said, well, I'm giving you a little bit of flu. That's how it works. But it gives you just enough so that your body builds up an immunity. So that what? So that you don't catch what? So that you don't catch the real thing. See, it gives you just enough that you build up an immunity so that you don't catch the real thing. Here's my question. Do you think in our culture today that we have become vaccinated Christians? Are there folks, do you think, that they've caught just enough that it keeps them from catching the real thing? And the real thing is a narrow way, and it's hard. The thing that's not real, it's wide and it's easy, but where does it lead? Huh? Where does it lead? Destruction. It leads to destruction. So Jesus says all this stuff, and it's hard. It sounds so hard. It's like, hey, come on. Lighten up, Jesus. We just want to have a little fun. But here's the deal. Jesus is wanting us to have life. And fun is a part of that. He's wanting us to have something that's greater than fun. He's wanting us to have joy. And that's deeper, and that's more powerful than fun. I like to have fun, but joy is better. Because fun, you can lose fun. Fun is dependent upon the circumstances. Joy is not dependent upon life circumstances. And Jesus is wanting us to have this joy. He's wanting us to have a life that's fulfilled. He's wanting us to have this vibrancy, a spirit-filled life. And what he's saying is, but it's a hard way. Look, it's just, it's hard. And it's going to be hard. So understand what it is that you're getting yourself, understand what it is that you're getting yourself into. So another guy came up to him. Another disciple said to him, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. Here's another guy. He's wanting to follow Jesus. And so what he says to him is, well, let me first go and bury my father. Reasonable or unreasonable? Sounds reasonable, doesn't it? You know, guy's dad's died. I want to follow you, but first I need to go do this. I need to go bury my father. Jesus said to him, follow me and leave the dead to bury their own dead. Man, why? So teacher, I'll follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said to him, foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests. Son of man has nowhere to lay his head. If you're going to follow me, just understand what that means. It means that it's not always going to be easy. And you need to understand that. Jesus is saying to this guy, you need to understand what it is that you're getting yourself into. If you don't, at the first time it starts to get hard, you're going to be bailing out. So understand what it is to be a follower of me really means. Another guy comes up and says, I want to follow you, but first I need to go bury my father. Here's what's interesting. In that day and time, in the Jewish culture, the burial of one's parents was one of the highest obligations, duties, and priorities that a person had in their life. That when a parent died, it was up to the children to make sure that they had a proper burial, and that was one of the highest priorities in their life. So what's Jesus saying here? Jesus is reminding this guy that, look, if you're going to follow me, I have to be the highest priority in your life, even above the highest priority in your life. You see what he's saying? So it's not just, oh, if you're going to follow me, I've got to be above, a few things. I've got to be more important than, some things that don't really matter. Jesus is saying, if you're going to follow me, I have to be first. I've got to be of ultimate importance. I have to be the most important thing in your life. Not second, not third. I've got to be the most important thing in your life. And it's going to be hard, but it's going to give you life. We're coming to that in just a minute, but it's going to give you life. What Jesus is doing here is he's telling the truth. And I think it's important for us to just take just a minute and talk about that. He's telling them the truth. I was thinking about this, putting the Bible study together. If Jesus were on this physical earth and he were appointed to one of our churches, how long do you think he would make it as a preacher? You know what I think? About 5 minutes. I think about 5 minutes in his first sermon, it would be, hey. Because Jesus did what? He told the truth. Jesus told the truth. And the truth is what gives us life. He's not saying this stuff to make life miserable for us. He's saying this stuff because this is really where you get life. And he wants that so desperately for his followers. So he tells them the truth. Here's the thing. The truth sometimes stings, doesn't it? Have you ever had somebody tell you the truth? And at first it really stung. Amy and I went back to Lubbock, Texas a few weeks ago. It was their 125th anniversary in their church. And went back and taught an old Sunday school class that I'd started years ago. Got to speak in the worship service. And it was wonderful. It was great. One of the great things about it is, we hadn't seen a lot of people in a long time. We left there 16 years ago. Some of them we hadn't seen. It had been 16 years since we had seen them. I was 45 years old when I was 38 when I went there. 38 years old. Lord have mercy, I look like a college student. But my picture is that, they got the picture of the ministers in there. I look like a high school senior. And at 45 when I left. We got back and all these people were coming up and they were saying, oh my gosh, you haven't changed a bit. Can you believe that? That's what they said. You haven't changed a bit. That's what they said. You haven't changed a bit. Oh, my gosh. I was just eating that stuff up. I mean, it was like, wow, I haven't changed a bit, you know. 16 years, hadn't changed a bit. Man, I felt so good. And I saw Sylvia. And Sylvia, I love Sylvia dearly, and she was a wonderful person. But Sylvia is what we would call different. Unique. Sylvia was unique. Some people might say a little eccentric. And I saw Sylvia, and we'd standing there in the hallway, and I'd just had several people come. You haven't changed a bit. And then I saw Sylvia. Hey, Sylvia, how in the world are you doing? She said, I'm doing fine. She just started laughing. She was just cackling. She said, I'm doing fine. She could barely get fine out. She was laughing so hard. She was just laughing and laughing and laughing. And finally, she caught her breath, and she said, man, you have changed. And then she laughed some more. And then she said, so much. You have changed so much. Oh, my gosh. I didn't want to hear that at all. I wanted to go back to these people that were lying to me. Because that was easy to hear. Are you with me? That was so easy to hear that. Because that's what I wanted to hear. You know what we want to hear? We want to hear what we already believe. We want to hear what makes us feel good. Don't you? I do. I loved hearing that I hadn't changed. I knew I'd changed. But boy, I sure loved hearing somebody tell me that I hadn't changed, because I kind of, sort of, almost fell into the trap of believing it. Are you with me? And then somebody came, and what did Sylvia do? She told me what? Say that again. Sylvia told me the truth. You don't have to say it so loud. Sylvia told me the truth. And the truth stung. Jesus told the truth. And Jesus said, look, enter by the narrow gate. And here's the reason why. The gate is wide and the way is easy. The way is easy that leads to destruction. In our culture today, look, you know this and I know this. For a lot of people, what it means to be a Christian is being nice. It's to be nice. That's what it means to be a Christian. I'm all for being nice. I like to be nice. I want to be as nice, as good as the next guy. But that's not all that it means to be Christian, right? I mean, it's a whole lot more than being nice. Those who enter by that wide, easy way are many. The gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life. And those who find it are few. And then Jesus, you see what he's doing now. So he says, there's all these false prophets out there. So how are you going to know who they are? How are you going to know what false is? Well, you know it by fruits. Now he's describing what some of those fruits are. He's saying, here's the guy that says, I want to follow you. I want to go wherever it is you want me to go. Well, look, make sure you know what you're getting yourself into, because here's what it means. It means giving your whole life away. Remember what he said in chapter 16? This is what it means to be the Messiah. I'm going to give my whole life away. Suffering, dying, sacrificing, giving up my whole life. Simon Peter said, no way. There's no way that it means that. And Jesus said, not only is it what it means for me to be the Messiah, but if you're going to follow me, it's what it means for you as well. It's giving up everything, because that's the way we find life. What Jesus is saying in this passage here is, he doesn't want part of us. He wants all of us. Are you with me? Not part, but all of us. Skip over to chapter 10. We see some of the same stuff, a little different way. Do not think that I have come to bring peace on earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. Narrow way. Hard. For I've come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's foes will be those of his own household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. He who loves father. What's Jesus saying there? Is Jesus saying not to love mother or father? No, he doesn't say that at all, does he? What is he saying? He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. See, it's another way of, remember what we talked about a moment ago, the burial of the parent? Jesus is saying, listen, whatever is of highest priority in your life, I have to be above that. And here's an interesting way of looking at that. The more you love Jesus, then, the more you can love mother and father. The more you love mother and father, the more you can love Jesus. It's just that Jesus has to be above. He's saying, listen, I don't want just part of you. I want your whole life, and I've got to be what's most important in your life. He who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Listen, I've got a son and a daughter. You know how much I love them? Sure you do. You do. If you've got children, you know how much I love them. The same as you love your children. Jesus is not saying don't love your children. What's he saying? I've got to be first. Not second. I've got to be first. And he who does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it. He who loses his life for my sake will find it. Sounds like a riddle. But look at what he's saying. He who finds his life, the one whose life caves in on itself, the life of a church that caves in on itself, if it all becomes about us, what happens? We lose life. We lose it. And it happens, and it happens all the time. It happens to us all the time. Everything starts to revolve around us. It's me, it's my concerns, it's getting what I want. All of my life starts to revolve around me. What happens to my life? Gosh, you lose it. That's the way that leads to destruction. But when you lose your life, notice the next words that he says, those who lose their life for what? For my sake will find life. When we lose our life, when we give ourselves up for Jesus, and how do you do that? You love the people that Jesus loved. You know, you live the life of the Messiah. Here's the Messiah that did what? Suffer, die, sacrifice, made the ultimate sacrifice. He's saying, listen, church, this is what disciples, followers, people at First Church Murfreesboro, Cliff, this is what I want you to do. I want you to give your life up for me, and I don't want part of it. I want every bit of it. I want every bit of it because that's how you really find life. You know what happens to me? See if you can relate to this. This is what happens to me. What happens to me is if I'm not careful, I start to let other things take the place of Jesus. Does that happen to you? And you know what? If we're not careful, Jesus is not only not at the top of the list, he's not even on the chart. That's what can happen to us. So what Jesus is saying is, I want everything. And so we know whether he's first by doing what? Well, you'll know them by their fruits. That's what he said. You'll know them by their fruits. So watch how they live. Here's a question. What do you say tonight is of ultimate priority in your life? What's the most important thing in your life? That's one question. But here's the other question. By the way we are living our lives, what would you say that other people say is the most important thing in our life? That's where the rubber meets the road. Those other people out there, when they watch us, what would they say is the most important? By the things that we do, by the way that we serve, by the way that we live our lives, what would they say? If somebody followed you around, what would they say is the most important thing in your life? Somebody looks at our church here at First Church, what would they say is the most important thing in our life? Would they say that it's Jesus? And maybe they would. I hadn't been here long enough to know yet. But they're going to know by watching. Are you with me? They're going to know by watching how we live, what we do, how we relate to other people. They're going to know by how we spend our time. Are we spending our time on the things that really matter? Are we spending our time on the things that really matter? Years ago, I read about a guy. This guy, it was interesting. He was 55 years old, and it hit him that he was over halfway there. 55, more than likely, Half his life is gone. Over half of his life is gone. And it kind of hit him. It kind of hit him hard. It was sobering. Half his life was gone. And so he thought, gee, you know, what have I been doing? What have I been doing with my time? He realized that his favorite day of the week was Saturday. That was the day that he spent it in his workshop. And he loved Saturdays. And here's what he did. He had been reading and discovered at that time, this was a few years ago, it may be a little bit more now, but at that time, the average lifespan of an American male was 75 years. It may be a little bit higher than that now, but at that time, 75 years. 75 years was the average lifespan of a man, American male. So here's what he did. He took 75, he multiplied it by 52 weeks in the year, came up with 3,900 weeks of life. 3,900 Saturdays, 3,900 of the best days of his life, his most favorite day. But then he realized he already lived 55 years of that, so he took 55, multiplied it by 52, and he got 2,860. You can check the math on this, but it's right. And then he rounded up. He just rounded up. 2,860, 55 times 52, 2,860, rounded up to 2,900. 2,900 Saturdays that he'd already lived. He's not going to get those back. They're gone. What does that leave? He's got 1,000 Saturdays left. 1,000 Saturdays. 1,000 weeks left in his life. What's he going to do with it? He goes downtown, goes to the nearest toy store that he can find, and he bought every marble that he could find. It took him 3 stores. He went to 3 stores. He bought every marble they had in all 3 of those stores before he could get to 1,000. Have you heard this? 1,000 marbles. He took those 1,000 marbles home and he put them in a container, a big jar. Those 1,000 marbles, he put them in a jar. And then here's what he did. Every Saturday when he got up, he put that jar out in his workshop. And when he went out to his workshop, first thing he would do is reach in and take out a marble and throw it away. Because that was one less Saturday that he would ever get to spend in the rest of his life. That week was gone. That week was gone and he would never get it back again. And he said it was amazing what he learned from that and the impact it made on his life to watch as those marbles started going down in that jar, to watch his life literally diminish in front of him, to see, what am I going to do with the time I've got left? I had a guy in Clarksville that gave me a jar of marbles. And I was going to bring it tonight as kind of a physical object lesson for you to show you. And I discovered in our move, I'd lost my marbles. So I couldn't bring it. And then I got to thinking, have I lost my marbles? Have I really lost my marbles? If somebody were to watch me and the way that I spend my time each day, each week, would they say that Jesus was the most important thing in my life? Or would they say it's something else? Look, guys, listen to me. This is what's going to change our church. Don't misunderstand me. Please don't misunderstand me. When I say things like that, I am not in any way saying that this is not a wonderful church. Do you understand me? I'm not saying that at all. This church has done wonderful things. This church has changed the lives. I'm looking at people in here whose lives have been changed by coming and being a part of this wonderful congregation. But as a church, as a whole, if we get this, that Jesus is the most important thing in my life and I'm going to give my life to Him, and every day I'm going to get up and say, Jesus, You're the most important thing in my life. I want to live that way. Help me live that way so that other people can see it. Let me spend my time on what really matters. Let me spend my money on the stuff that really matters, that honors and glorifies You. Let me serve in ways that other people see my heart, and in my heart they see You. I'm going to tell you, we'll turn our little corner of the world upside down. Are you with me? And I think that's what Jesus is talking about when He says, look, if you're going to come after me. It's denying yourself, taking up your cross, and following me. What happens is, if your life is like mine, what happens is other stuff starts to creep in. It just starts to creep in. Let me tell you how it happened to me in a little simple way years ago when I was in Lubbock, Texas. In 1999, I bought a brand new Ford Mustang. 1999. I bought a 1999 Mustang. Not just a Mustang. I bought a 1999 Mustang GT. Are you with me? Do you know what GT stands for? Get into trouble. I was the fastest preacher in town. Lord have mercy. Not only did I buy a brand new 1999 Mustang GT, I bought a brand new 1999 red Mustang GT. Not maroon. Not maroon. No, no, no. Not burgundy. No, 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 no. Fire engine red. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. I love that car. Ask my wife. I loved that car. I didn't wash it. I bathed it. I had to, church had multiple services in Lubbock, so I went, you know, earlier than the rest of my family. One Sunday after preaching the 8:30 service, Amy and the kids would come for Sunday school and then go to, our daughter was in junior high at that time. Our son had just started high school, and they'd come to Sunday school and then the 11 o'clock service. After the 8:30 service, I'm greeting everyone as I greet folks here. People are coming through the line, and all of a sudden there stood Amy and our kids, Adam and Meredith. I'll never forget it. I can see the look on their face right now. It's a look of concern. And I knew immediately something was wrong. I knew immediately something was wrong. And then my son said this, and I'll never forget these words. This is a direct quote. He looked at me and he said, "Dad, it's going to be okay." That's what he said. "Dad, it's going to be." I thought, you know, Pop had died. That's my dad. Is Pop's sick? Is he in the hospital? Mom, something happened to Mom? What's going on? He said, "Dad, it's going to be okay." I said, "What's happened? There are people still coming through the line." He said, "Somebody hit your car in the parking lot." I dropped what I was doing. These people that are coming through the line. Hey, see you later. I still had my robe on. Honest to God, I still had my robe on. I ran out. I ran across the street, robe stole, it's flapping in the wind. And went and looked, and there it was. It was just this big dent and scrape in the back fender of my brand new 1999 Ford Mustang GT fire engine red. I was just sick. I was sick. Went back inside. Thank goodness we didn't have a 9:45 service. Thank goodness we didn't have another service until 11 o'clock. And I wasn't teaching Sunday school that Sunday. I went up to my office. Honest to goodness, to compose myself. I was distraught. I was distraught. I went up to my office. I literally had to pull myself together. Now, do you know why I had to do that? I'm going to tell you why I had to do that. Because somebody hit my little Mustang. And they put a dent in my little Mustang. Now you tell me, is that sick or what? Listen, I'm a car guy. Ain't nothing wrong with good cars. Ain't nothing wrong with that in all the world. But when you get as upset as I got that day over that, nobody had died. We hadn't lost our home. Nobody lost a job. Somebody had dented my little Mustang. You know what I learned that day? I learned that something else had become of ultimate priority in my life. Are you guys with me? Do you see how easy it is for it to creep into our life? It's just so easy for it to creep into our life. And here's what Jesus is wanting. He's saying, I want followers, and I want followers that are going to make me first in their life. I want to follow you, Jesus. Well, listen, let me tell you something. It's going to get hard. And you know what's going to be hard about it? One of the things that's going to be hard about it is Jesus wants all of us. He wants us, all of us, all the way or no way at all. And that gets hard at times. That's why it's so important for us to have this time. Are you guys with me? That's why it's so important to have this time. Because if you can do this by yourself, you're better than I am. Because I can't. I got to have the church to help me and remind me. Here's the other thing. Here's the other thing it said. We're almost through. Almost through tonight. At the very end, Jesus closes his gospel. And we'll come back to this, you know, when we get to the end. But at the very end, Jesus talks about going and making disciples. Verse 19, go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. Teaching them to observe everything that I've commanded you. That's why church is so important. That's why Sunday school is so important. That's why this time is so important. It's because we're teaching each other what it means, all that He has commanded us. Look, this stuff doesn't just fall out of the sky. At least it doesn't for me. I think you've got to be taught. And we in the church, we've got to teach each other. We've got to teach each other how to give. Jesus talked about that more than anything else. We've got to teach each other how to live. We've got to teach each other how to serve. We've got to teach each other what it means to take up the cross and follow Him. Jesus wants us to do that, not to make life miserable. He wants us to do that so that we have the life that He so desperately wants us to have. So desperately. And it begins with making Him first. Here's what I want us to pray about as you come tonight. I want us to pray about that. I want us to pray about what Trey sang about a moment ago. I've decided to follow Jesus. What that means. I want us to pray tonight about what it is that's first in our lives. And is it Jesus or is it something else? And calling upon Him to help us make Him first in our lives. Not part of the time, but all the time. And being a church that will do that. Will you pray for that tonight? Will you join me in praying for that tonight? Will you? Let's come and pray.